You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Inflation is easing, but not evenly throughout the economy. Since it's the time of year for Charles Dickens, let's call it A Tale of Two Inflations. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's the 23rd of December. Good to have you along. In what has become an annual holiday tradition, Congress has scrambled to pull together and pass a $1.7 trillion spending bill, avoiding an end-of-year partial government shutdown. For more on what's in that spending deal and to chat about the economic week that was, I'm joined by Gina Smilek at The New York Times and Heather Long at The Washington Post. Welcome, you two.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, Kimberly.
So, Heather, I want to start with you and this big news here in D.C., which is that Congress passed that funding bill. And why do we do this? Why do we do it this way?
It really is crazy. Lawmakers who can't get along and fight all year long suddenly are ready to do kumbaya because they want to avoid a snowstorm and get the heck out of town. And so they're willing to pass a bill with over 4,000 pages that clearly nobody's read yet and allocates $1.7 billion in funding. A couple of my relatives were asking me, how can the stock market be up today based on this craziness? And I said, well, I mean, from an economic perspective, from a policy perspective, it's terrible. But from an economic perspective, they got the job done. We have funding. There is not going to be a shutdown. Both military funding and domestic funding, it goes up a little bit, but not to crazy levels that would likely to spur a lot of inflation. So there's still a number of things they didn't get done, like the debt ceiling didn't get lifted. That'll be a big problem in 2023. But from an economic and markets perspective, this isn't as horrible as it looks.
Gina, anything in this particular deal that jumps out at you is particularly meaningful?
You know, it's 4,000 pages, so there's a lot in there, obviously.
Still working through it, right?
Yeah, but I think one big thing is we saw a lot of military spending in this piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. It's up about 10% from the prior year. You know, there's $45 billion in aid for Ukraine there. And so I think one big takeaway here is that we are really investing in military operations, given the geopolitical strife we've seen over the last year. You know, aside from that, there's just so much stuff in there, you know, and I think one big takeaway here is that these 11th hour packages, it's really an easy way to get some, you know, or not easy way necessarily, but it is a way to get things in to these pieces of legislation that might otherwise, you know, take a little bit more debate. You know, for example, their stuff is diverse as a broader ban on TikTok on government devices and a pause in some regulations that were going to affect lobster fishers in Maine. You know, like this legislation is really all over the place.
So meanwhile, we had two economic data releases this morning, personal consumption expenditures and consumer confidence. Let's take the PCE first, showing that inflation is cooling off a little bit. Heather, does this mean that what the Fed is doing is working?
Well, it's certainly more encouraging signs. Nobody's ready to declare victory yet. It was still a 5.5% reading, which is a good bit above the 2% target. But it's down. It's another indicator, just like the consumer price index that has been steadily falling for the past two or three months. And that's a good sign if you're Jay Powell heading into the holidays. And obviously, markets reacted similarly. You know, the question is just how much faster does it fall? There's still a number of service inflation that's lingering into the new year, even as all these goods prices are finally starting to come down or at least taper off. And it's just all the, you never know the surprises, what could really happen with the war in Ukraine and with energy prices, or if it's a really cold winter and suddenly we see these gas and energy prices spike again. So there's just a lot of uncertainty still.
Gina, in your piece on the PCE numbers this morning, you use the word stubborn to describe inflation. How so?
Right. So I think that the kind of inflation we are going to be talking about for pretty much all of 2023 is the stubborn portion of it, which is the pieces of inflation that have less to do with sort of all the weirdness we dealt with around the pandemic and more to do with underlying fundamentals in the economy. And so what we're seeing now is a deceleration coming from dropping fuel prices and healing supply chains. It's kind of the low-hanging fruit of the inflation world. What we're going to have to deal with next year is inflation that is being pushed up or kept up by things like rapidly rising pay. You know, companies aren't going to want to try and pass along their climbing labor bills to consumers, and that could help to keep this inflation elevated. That kind of inflation is harder to deal with. It just takes longer to stamp out. It takes more of a Fed response. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we really have to sort of work on from a macroeconomic perspective rather than just kind of waiting to see it fade away. And so I think that's the stubborn aspect of all of this.
So then on the consumer sentiment numbers, which also came out today, Heather, folks seem to be feeling a little bit better about the economy despite that stubborn inflation. What do you think is behind that?
Well, it's certainly a funny read in the sense that we've seen a couple of these consumer sentiment gauges, particularly this week and the one that came out today, showing a pickup in sentiment, as you're describing. But at the same time, we're also seeing cooler and softer consumer spending. So we sort of saw the flip earlier this fall. Consumers were telling us they were super gloomy, but they were still going out and spending a ton of money. And now we see the opposite. They say that they're happier and a little bit rosier outlook, but at the same time, they seem to be pulling back and being more cautious. So it's still a little bit of a head scratcher heading into the new year. But, you know, so far, all these warnings about a dire recession, we're still in a world where the economy is adding a couple thousand, 100,000 jobs a month, and inflation, especially the gas prices, have come down.
Gina, real quick, I want to point to another piece that you had out this week about what we do with all of this data. And economists try to model it out and make predictions about where the economy is going. And you say a lot of those models just don't work anymore. Why?
It's just such a weird moment in the economy. And I just think you almost can't say this enough. Like, we are making models, we are making best guesses based on historical data that we basically know is not going to be predictive of the future. And so it's just a moment for extreme humility. And we're not through that yet. You know, we are not back to some sort of normal pre-pandemic, this is just how the economy works kind of world. Everything is still a mess. And things are going to be very hard to predict next year. And I think it's just one of those moments where we need to buckle up and remember that, and remember that we're going to face down a lot of surprises in 2023.
Okay. Gina Smilek at the New York Times and Heather Long at the Washington Post. Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
You too. Investors also are trying to figure out what to make of this economy. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, let's do a little bit more on that personal consumption expenditures price index we were just talking about. It excludes volatile gas and food prices, and as we've mentioned before on this show, it is the Fed's preferred inflation measure. It's heading in the right direction, but drill deeper into those numbers and you'll find that story of two inflations. Price levels for goods dropped 0.4% from October to November, but price levels for services went up by 0.4% over the exact same period. Marketplace's Matt Levin explains why.
After the pandemic hit, we gorged ourselves on Peloton, sofas, air fryers. So the prices of goods went up, and the supply chain mess didn't help. Then we got through the Delta variant and Omicron, and this year we gorged ourselves on flights, hotels, eating out.
It's all services inflation now, and it's going to be a battle between goods prices declining and service sector prices rising, and also how people choose to spend their money.
Drew Mattis is chief market strategist at MetLife Investment Management. He says our appetite for certain services may be waning, like, say, traveling to see relatives.
We're settling back into kind of where people had been pre-COVID. I mean, after all, there's only so much family you can take.
Sorry, Mima, maybe next year. While airfares may be falling, inflation in the service sector is a thorny problem to fix, says Charles Lieberman at Advisors Capital Management.
Much of the cost of providing services is the cost of labor. And until we see a material increase in the unemployment rate, that's not likely to dissipate.
Wages and salaries grew 0.5% from October to November. The Fed wants to keep the service sector out of the dreaded wage price spiral. Prices go up, workers demand raises, companies raise prices to pay for those raises, workers demand more raises. Lisa Erickson is at U.S. Bank Wealth Management.
Right now, we aren't seeing a wage price spiral within the service sector, but we do want to continue to monitor the trajectory.
Erickson says she does expect overall inflation to come down next year, but not to the Fed's target rate of 2%. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Heading into this holiday weekend, many are preparing, yes, for gifts, but also for time with family, perhaps even around a dinner table. Every family has its own holiday meal traditions. Maybe you've got a turkey to roast or pies to bake. But in New Mexico, it wouldn't be the holidays without tamales. Those bundles of corn masa and meat cooked in chili sauce are in high demand this time of year, and Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more on the businesses that keep that tradition alive.
In Albuquerque's Barelas neighborhood, La Mexicana Tortilla has been around forever.
We started in 1932 by my grandparents.
Says that restaurant's owner, Marco Nunez.
And our recipes are the same recipes that my grandma made.
Including for holiday pozole, bizcochitos, and tamales that bring in around 40% of yearly business.
Definitely, we're kind of a tradition for a lot of people for, you know, several generations. This is where they get their masa and tamales and hoja and red chili and, you know, all the traditional New Mexican food products and things to make your New Mexican food.
Marco says holiday preparations start 6 months out. Crunch time is now. From the tortilla factory in the back of the restaurant, where a stone mill is cranking out fluffy corn masa.
All our stuff starts off as corn, straight up.
To the office where Marco's mom, Margie, is fielding last-minute orders.
This is my mom.
Oh my God, can I help you? Do you have prepared masa today? We sure do all the time.
To the busy restaurant kitchen. Today, Marco's Aunt Sandy is wrapping up mini tamales with green chili and zucchini.
We've been in this business so long, I grew up in it, I don't know anything different.
But the business is changing, especially in the last 3 years. For one, Marco says staffing up is harder than ever.
We can't find anybody. Doesn't matter how much we pay, doesn't matter what.
On top of being short-staffed, the cost of ingredients is up, and so are menu prices. A dozen tamales is $30 this year, compared to $25 last year. Marco says his customers are sensitive to that.
They understand that, you know, we have to raise our prices. They just, they order less, you know, where somebody would order 5 dozen tamales, they order 2 dozen tamales.
Some others might see those higher prices and turn to their neighborhood tamale lady instead. At her home in Albuquerque's North Valley, Cheryl Ramirez is making her last batch of 1,200 tamales before she quits for the year.
I am spreading my masa on my tamales, and we're doing red chili pork right now.
Cheryl learned to make tamales from her mother. After she became a mom, she developed her own recipe, which is top secret, by the way, and turned that family tradition into a side hustle to pay for holiday presents. Now that her kids are grown,
this is all my mother money now.
Her ingredient costs are up too, but Cheryl's working on a smaller scale than La Mexicana, so she's been able to shop around for deals.
This is my most successful year out of all the years. It's crazy, but I feel like it's because I left my prices at what they are.
Just $20 a dozen. Cheryl's a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. This year, her tamale money is going toward a trip to see the Christmas Eve game.
I'm making a buck. Your stomach is satisfied with good homemade food, traditional New Mexican food, you know what I mean? So I think it's just a win-win situation.
Down the street in Barreras, Marco Nunez and his family aren't having the same luck. La Mexicana is usually a go-to breakfast and lunch spot, but with such short staff, Marco made the hard choice to close the dining room through December and focus on filling holiday orders.
And then we'll reassess in January and decide if we're even going to open the kitchen back up.
After 90 years in this neighborhood, Marco feels a responsibility to keep the restaurant afloat.
You know, there's another generation eating our food, and that's going to be how they remember Christmas. The taste of our tamales is going to be what they remember. That's going to cause that memory for the rest of their life.
He's looking for solutions so that his family business can continue to be part of other families' holiday traditions. In Albuquerque, I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Coming up,
the biggest thing you will see is cardboard, right?
All thanks to those online shopping orders. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average picked up 176 points, 0.5%, to close at 33,203. The NASDAQ found 21 points, 0.2%, to finish at 10,497. And the S&P 500 added 22 points, nearly 0.6%, to end at 3844. The National Weather Service says something like 200 million of us are under winter weather warnings or advisories. FlightAware reports more than 7,000 delayed flights and about 5,000 cancellations for U.S. flyers today. Delta Airlines rose 0.7%, American Airlines lifted 1.2%, Southwest Airlines ascended 1.8%. Bonds fell, the yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.75%, and you're listening to Marketplace.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. From those inflation numbers we talked about earlier, it does seem consumers are generally slowing down a bit in the spending department, which ties into the other bit of economic data that came out today, consumer sentiment. It tanked to all-time lows early this summer when gas prices spiked. Now, since then, there's been a bit of improvement. Today's numbers from the University of Michigan's Consumer Survey were up 5% from November to December. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, who commuted part of the way to work in snowshoes today, has more.
One key reason consumer sentiment has improved a bit is gas prices, down from $5 a gallon on average in early summer to around $3 a gallon now.
gas prices are very important.
Joanne Hsu directs the University of Michigan Consumer Surveys.
It's a price on the street all the time. It doesn't matter whether or not you drive or whether or not you're the one doing the grocery shopping. Everyone sees those prices.
As it's gotten cheaper to fill up, consumers have cheered up, but only a little, says Jesse Wheeler at polling firm Morning Consult.
The economic mood across the United States remains very grim. Food prices and the prices of other essentials are still rising pretty quickly. Consumers are very aware of this.
Because, he says, they've been running out of cash.
As inflation has continued to outpace wage gains throughout the year, many households are being forced to tap into savings and credit usage, and this is largely unsustainable.
One reason consumers aren't even more downbeat is that unemployment is still really low. Chris Jackson at public opinion firm Ipsos says most workers remain confident they'll keep their jobs. And while people are hearing headlines about job cuts in high tech and high finance,
only until we actually see people start losing their jobs in large numbers would we see consumer sentiment really dive off a cliff.
Still, consumers are uneasy, says Andrew Hunter at Capital Economics.
This general environment of economic uncertainty, everyone talking more and more about a recession,
which is likely to weigh on consumer sentiment and dampen consumer spending well into 2023. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
All that stuff consumers are still buying includes a lot of plastic, which many of us try to recycle. Every year, beverage companies in the U.S. produce about 100 billion plastic bottles, and the vast majority of them go unrecycled, according to environmental scientists. In response, California has passed a slew of recent laws that target waste. One law, set to kick in next month, requires beverage makers to use some recycled materials in single-use bottles. Supporters of the law say it expands the market for post-consumer plastics and shifts some of the responsibility for recycling plastic onto the companies that produce it. Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports.
At the Burbank Recycle Center, workers sort through a stream of mostly paper and plastic, all carried by conveyor belt from a giant pile beneath them to the platform where they're standing. The pile reaches about 15 feet high and takes up much of the warehouse. Its contents have been trucked here as part of California's recycling program. Recycling specialist Amy Hammes says they have to remove problematic, even dangerous items like batteries and isolate what's valuable.
The biggest thing you will see is cardboard, right? And that's really grown in the last decade because of online shopping.
That cardboard is lucrative for them. Not lucrative, the tons of plastic bags and wrap mixed in.
Not only is it something we can't sell, it tangles in our sorting equipment, it gets dirty. It's the leading thing of what we don't want.
Plastic is lumped into seven categories. Plastic number one is used to make things like soft drink bottles, along with juice and produce containers. Two is used in milk jugs and detergent bottles.
And then five is kind of an emerging plastic that has some value in some instances. But number one and number two are really the money makers in plastic.
From here, the plastic is put into bales and sold off to make carpet, clothing, and other products. But Hammes says most of the rest, even products bearing the recycling logo, can't be recycled or sold by traditional programs, so they end up in landfills and waterways. That problem caught the attention of California Assemblyman Phil Ting 6 years ago when his daughter was in the fourth grade.
Her teacher asked them all to watch a video about a huge dump of plastic just sitting in the middle of the ocean. It was just crazy to think that we couldn't do something about it.
Ting is co-sponsor of California Assembly Bill 793, enacted last year and soon to be enforced. It requires beverage companies to use 15% recycled material in plastic bottles in the state's container deposit program. Ting says the mandate rises to 50% by 2030.
I mean, we are such a big market that if they're going to do it for California, it just becomes easier and easier to do it for other parts of the United States.
One of the world's largest producers of plastic waste, Coca-Cola, told Marketplace that its plastic packaging portfolio in California is already in compliance with the law. It used an average of 17% recycled content in 2021. Both Coca-Cola and its rival, PepsiCo, which didn't respond to Marketplace's inquiries, say they aim to reach 50% recycled content globally by 2030. Susan Collins, president of the Container Recycling Institute, says the new law is better than promises. She expects it'll spur change by growing the market for used plastic.
There will now be much more competition because the beverage companies will have to prove that they're putting 15% recycled content into their beverage bottles in California.
This will give beverage companies a financial reason to push for recyclable plastic bottles to actually get recycled. The American Beverage Association, a trade group, says the industry is also redesigning plastic bottles to be fully recyclable. And Collins says the recycled content law helps recyclers who are exposed to price volatility for their product.
If times are good, they can survive. And then when there's a downturn in the prices of recycled material, a lot of them go out of business.
But proponents acknowledge that boosting recycled content is just one step towards dealing with plastic waste. The International Energy Agency expects plastic production to double by 2040. In Burbank, California, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, as the 117th Congress was winding down for the year, the January 6th committee released its final report last night and this week asked the Justice Department to charge former President Donald Trump for his role in the insurrection. According to the committee's report, Trump and the Republican National Committee raised more than $250 million for their Stop the Steal campaign. And just a reminder of some earlier details from the past 2 years, the architect of the Capitol and other officials estimated the cost to fix the building and the statues and artwork inside, plus provide physical and mental health care to those who were there that day, would be upwards of $30 million. Going a touch long, so no moment of economic context today. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. And I'm Kimberly Adams. We will see you on Monday. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.